Welcome to tonight's Saturday Night Special with Rob Berger, author of Retire Before Mom and Dad, here on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast.
I'm Rob Berger, author of Retire Before Mom and Dad. I encourage you to find your own journey to true financial freedom. And one way to be inspired to do that is by listening to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend, Scott Mader. Even when you're saving, let's say for a down payment on a house, it's still to buy something just down the road, or even retirement. You're still going to spend it just 30 or 40 years from now. But the epiphany I had was actually, money is incredibly valuable, even the money you hope you never spend.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world. You know, one area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really, really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type. But if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone. And we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch. In tonight's 12th episode of the Saturday Night Special, Rob and I talk financial freedom. Rob shares why he thinks it's not about just the money, but rather how you focus on it that really matters. Rob and I talk with you about some of the big money myths and why believing them holds you back. And Rob also shares why having the right mindset around money is way more important than what you actually make, and lots more. Rob Berger is an investor, blogger, former lawyer, and self-proclaimed Buckeye fanatic, as well as the author of Retire Before Mom and Dad, The Simple Numbers Behind a Lifetime of Financial Freedom. Rob brings his experience as a litigation attorney, a securities industry regulator, and his years of financial blogging that started back when he founded DoughRoller.net in 2007. He brings all of this to bear as he helps uncover the roadmap to building the life that most people dream about but never realize. Rob, welcome to the show.
God's good to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, one of the things that I think if anyone's been around the financial blogging world and looking at the internet all the time, the thing that you hear over and over again is the so-called latte factor, you know, cut out all the expenses, give up all the pleasures of life. And then you turn around and say that it's not all about scrimp and sacrifice. Instead, it's about focusing on our superpowers, the other side of the equation.
Yeah.
Would you expand a little bit on why you think sacrifice isn't the real path to financial freedom?
Well, I don't think sacrifice is the right way to think about it. Take the latte factor, for example. There's a lot that you can learn about money that has nothing to do with whether or not you go get a latte, right? So the one thing that it can teach you is that investing relatively small amounts of money on a regular basis will, over time, turn into piles of cash. Mm-hmm. And that's not about lattes or not lattes, sacrifice or not. That's just math.
Right.
It's just pure and simple math. But there's sort of a blessing and a curse in that, right? The blessing is, you know, okay, good. Small amounts of money can turn into piles of cash over time. But the curse is that it kind of takes away our excuses. I mean, not to say that we don't ever hit really hard times where maybe it truly is the case we can't save anything. That might happen to all of us at one time or another. But by and large, we can probably save something, even if it's $25 a month in your 401k at work or in an IRA or in a savings account. And so the latte factor, among other things, teaches us that if we do that and continue to do that consistently, it's eventually going to turn into a lot of money if we invest it wisely. And so to me, that's, again, that's got nothing to do with sacrifice per se. In fact, you know, a lot of times what I talk about are ways to do that without changing your lifestyle at all, right? Mm-hmm. And we can certainly talk about that. So it may involve what seems like sacrifice at first. I actually gave up mochas. I used to drink a mocha 7 times a week, literally. And I decided to stop for health reasons, right? Mm-hmm. And I was miserable. I mean, like for the first week, all I could think about was the stupid mocha at Starbucks. So in some ways that was sacrifice, right? Except that funny thing happened. After about 3 weeks, I forgot about it. Didn't think about it. And that's been 2 or 3 years. So what starts out as a sacrifice may end up not being a sacrifice at all. But yeah, I mean, the real key of the latte factor is not that you shouldn't enjoy life today. It may be that you have to maybe really think about how you should enjoy life. But the bigger takeaway is that you can invest small amounts of money and that can still have a meaningful impact on your life.
What I'm hearing is this idea of it's not just really about focusing on, hey, what can I give up? But it's almost turning it around and saying, wait, what do I want more? You know, what's the priority? What's the real focus? Is that?
Yeah, I've learned that you think you know what makes you happy. And I've kind of learned over time that I'm not actually that good at knowing what's going to make me happy, right? You think you do. And I spent 10 years at a law firm, well, 8 of them trying to make partner. Because I thought that's what would make me happy. And I made partner. And after a couple of years of it, I thought, yeah, no, this isn't what actually makes me happy. Okay, it took me 10 years and 2,000 or more hours, billable hours a year to figure that out. So I'm a slow learner. That's maybe an extreme example. But we think we know what makes us happy. I'm not convinced that actually I'm all that good at figuring that out unless I experiment. Like the mocha, in a way, was an experiment, right?
Right.
Maybe a small experiment, maybe not all that significant in the big picture. But yeah, I don't think we're all that good at knowing what makes us happy.
Well, and I love the fact that you use the word experiment. The listeners of the show will pick up on that because I frame things that way all the time. I have a background in science. I actually have an educational background, degree in biochemistry, degree in genetics. So that kind of comes naturally to me to think of it that way. But, you know, I love that frame of, well, let's run an experiment. Let's find out, you know, rather than let's assume we know up front. How does that apply to more than just, you know, the money side of it? Are there other ways you run experiments in your life?
Well, I'm running one right now that certainly has a financial impact, but it also has an impact far beyond money. And that is I gave up my car. So now my wife has a car. So we have one car. And, you know, most couples, families probably have two. Mm-hmm. Or five. We have a neighbor who they have 4 cars. I have no idea why. So I gave up my car about 2 months ago, August, almost 3 months ago. Yeah. And I wasn't sure how I'd feel about it. Now, it's certainly a financial impact because even if it was paid for, which our car was, you know, you save on maintenance and insurance and on and on. So it certainly has a financial impact. But now I bike to the gym. When I do go to the coffee shop, I don't get a mocha, by the way, but when I go for my Americano, I take a bike or I can walk. Now, we do live in an area where that's feasible. Not everyone does, and I get that. But that's an experiment. My wife is convinced it won't last, although she's very supportive. We'll see. Maybe it won't. Maybe in a month I'll go buy a car. I don't know. But that's a kind of an experiment that I enjoy trying. And until you try it, you're not quite sure what you're going to think about it. And by the way, we live in Northern Virginia. We don't live in Texas. So I've got the winter around the corner.
Right, yeah.
So part of the experiment will be, how do I feel when I have to take an Uber somewhere because maybe there's ice on the road and I just don't feel safe biking? I don't know how I'm going to feel about that. But I can get downtown to Washington, D.C. It's a 15-minute bike ride to the metro, lock my bike up, get on the subway, and I'm down in D.C. and 25 minutes. So we'll see. That's one experiment that I'm running right now. And so far it's worked out pretty well.
Mm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens when the snow's on the ground and the ice is on the ground.
The thing is, Scott, like if you're in your 20s and you know, particularly as a couple, let's say, and you've got two cars, but you decide, you know what, we can actually survive with one car. And we're going to take the money we would have spent on the second car over a lifetime, and we're going to invest it. You'll end up with millions of dollars.
Right, right.
Now, some may say that can't be possible, but it is. In fact, I go through the math in my book on that very topic. But you know, when you invest that and compound it, and it ends up being just an amount of money that at first seems impossible. Mm-hmm. I mean, cars are just a huge expense. Again, I know not everyone can get rid of their cars. I'm not trying to push that on anyone. But if you can figure out a way to do it, it does turn into a pile of cash. Right. A truckload of cash is what I like to say when it comes to a car.
Well, and I mean, we don't, you know, we talked about, you know, I live far out in the country. So obviously giving up a car for me, you know, we do need more cars for more drivers, because otherwise you're trapped in the middle of nowhere for long periods of time. But at the same time, it's for us, it's a trade-off. Okay, so we have more than one vehicle, but we're going to give up in other areas. So for instance, our housing and our property taxes and all of that is much less expensive. So there is some balance there.
Absolutely.
You know, when you think about it, we've all heard the phrase, money can't buy happiness. We were talking earlier about how you're not real good at figuring out ahead of time, you know, what makes you happy. And there's jokes about that on both sides. You know, money can't buy happiness, but, you know, it sure does help put a down payment on it. And, you know, there's all sorts of jokes on both sides of that. Yeah. But you stress that it isn't really about buying happiness. Instead, it's about using money to leverage freedom.
Yeah.
I love that phrase, leverage freedom, and then pursue what does make you happy. So what's the difference there between focusing on money for happiness and money as a freedom tool?
Well, part of it is, again, going back to figuring out what makes you happy. I like to ask people, how much does happiness cost you? I have some friends where happiness for them is incredibly expensive. Mm. You know, you look at the way they spend their money. For them, happiness requires the private country club and the second and third home and the very expensive cars. And the list goes on and on. And, you know, if they've got the money to buy those things, I'm not here to judge them at all. I'm not someone who says, you know, I'm not teaching people how to reuse Ziploc bags 47 times, right? I'm not a frugalist, really. But I do think it helps to understand what makes you happy and how much does happiness cost you. At the end of the day, so here's really the epiphany I had. I used to look at money as it's valuable because you can spend it, right? Sure. So your money is valuable because you can buy things with it. You can go on vacations with it. Even when you're saving, let's say for a down payment on a house, it's still to buy something just down the road, or even retirement. You're still going to spend it just 30 or 40 years from now. But what I kind of, the epiphany I had was actually money is incredibly valuable. Even the money you hope you never spend. Hmm. Because what you're buying with it when you take that money and put it in a savings account, put it in a mutual fund in your 401k or IRA, is you're buying your freedom, right? $1 at a time. I used to think of money as something you spend. Now I look at money as something that can make me more money. I kind of view every dollar as an employee, and I can send it off to work and it never complains, and it attracts more employees, right? And pretty soon it's just more than you could even imagine. And it can have a pretty profound impact on your life long before you achieve what you might view as financial independence or the ability to retire. And one event in my life, you know, I started a private law firm. I kind of work, you know, people climb the corporate ladder. I climbed down. I started kind of at the top and worked. After that 10 years, I made partner. I took a massive pay cut and went into a corporation. And because I wanted something different than the law firm life. Mm. But the only reason I could take that massive pay cut was because of money we had saved. And it wasn't that I needed to go spend it now because we were making less, but I needed that security blanket.
Right. It was almost insurance.
Yes, exactly. And then 2.5 years later, I left that job, went into the government, into a regulator here in DC, and took another pay cut. So I just kept working backwards. And but I couldn't do that without the savings we had in the bank, or I wouldn't have had the guts to do it, right? So that's money we haven't spent. In fact, it's still in the bank and it's still earning us more dollars, but it had a real profound impact on our lives. So yeah, I kind of see money now as the ability, as using it to buy my freedom. Of course, you use money to buy stuff. You got to heat the house and feed the family. Sure. And I see it as much about buying my freedom. So now when we make big financial decisions in particular, my question is always, will it affect my ability to live my life the way I want to, my freedom? If it won't, I'm happy to spend it. Like I said, I'm not sort of the frugal.
Right, right.
It's
not cut everything. Coupon Tuesday kind of thing.
I hope I don't spend money frivolously, but I certainly spend money for convenience. I have someone cut my yard, right? I don't have to do that. And if I had to cut my yard, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But I certainly spend money for conveniences.
Sure.
I see the money as buying the freedom first.
It's interesting because I had the experience of being in a corporate leadership position, you know, very well compensated, and having this dream of launching my own business. And much the same way, my wife and I set up and worked really hard to save up money and, you know, put some in the bank and this sort of thing, so that whenever it was time to step down from that position and leave, it was like, okay, but we feel secure in this decision. You know, we feel safe in this decision. You know, of course, my wife's comment whenever I finally did step down was, it's about time, because she was ready before I was.
Yeah, but, I think my wife was too.
You know, I had more of the security gland in that case than she did. But it is the same. You know, it's funny how, because right before I left, about 6 months, 8 months before I left, they started doing layoffs at the company. Mm. And it was very strange to be the only person walking around in the office going, please lay me off, please lay me off, please lay me off, you know, because I'll take the severance. It'll be nice. You know, and of course they didn't. But it was kind of one of those situations where it's very weird to be the only person that has no concern about that kind of life-changing event, because we'd set up the situation to be prepared for it if it did happen. You know,
it's a great feeling.
It is. Though it is odd. you know? It is a little weird to sit in the break room and everyone else is stressing and you're kind of going, la, 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 it's okay.
Yeah.
But that's what money can do for you, used correctly, is it can give you that emotional freedom. You know, a couple of times you've touched on something and I want to draw it out. You know, we talked about the power of the math. You know, you invest a small amount over a long period of time with compounding, it makes more money. And you just talked about kind of that feeling of when your money is out there making money for you. And it's no longer just about your direct dollar. You know, I put in X number of hours, I earn X number of dollars, but actually my dollars are over here also earning money. You know, I talk to people all the time about the difference between, it's about the math, but it's also not about the math. It's also about the mindset and the behavior and the habits that you set up behind the math. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, how those two things intersection? Because, you know, obviously the math's the math, but it's also about how we get to the math, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, I look at it, I put it in sort of two buckets. Most people, myself included, when we think about making money, we think about our job, right? Our job, our business, a side hustle, all of that, right? If it's a couple, both working, perhaps if both are working, and that's, I think, for 99% of the people, how we think about making money. But what I've learned over time, and this is part math, but it's also, as you say, it's kind of a mental shift, is to look at your assets as making you money, right? Mm-hmm. And we can see that maybe in owning a home. We know that over time, hopefully, home values go up. We know sometimes they don't. But, you know, you can see that's an asset, maybe it goes up in value. But of course, the exact same thing is happening inside of a 401k or an IRA or in a taxable investment account. But we kind of almost not dismiss it, but it's kind of one of those things that, oh, yeah, it's over there. It's not really part of my monthly budget. I'm not thinking about it from a budgetary perspective. It'll be there in 40 years when I retire, right? But I've started to say, no. We need to be focused on that now and asking ourselves, how much income is that generating, right, for us? And how can we grow that? How can we build that asset? And of course, it's simple, but not easy, right? I mean, it's simple because the way you do it is you spend less than you make. Right. I mean, that's simple.
Ta-da!
Yeah, right. It's like, I know all your listeners are like, wow, Rob, I never thought about that. Obviously, the delta, the bigger you can make it, the better, right?
Sure.
Part of the trick is doing that with either without sacrifice. You know, I think there's a lot of ways to do that. Or by doing it with ways that at first seem like a sacrifice, like we talked about the mocha in my case. But it turns out, yeah, it wasn't really the sacrifice I thought it was.
Right.
But creating that delta and then investing that money. I think it's as simple as low-cost index funds for the vast majority of people. But there are other ways as well. And automating the process. You know, 401k is automated. An IRA can be automated.
Right.
You can automate savings into a taxable account or to a savings account. And in fact, you know, that whole automation thing is really critical when you start to make changes in your budget that reduce your spending, right? So let's say you change your insurance and you change your cable package. Not you didn't get rid of it, you just made changes to it, and maybe you made changes to your cell phone bill, and you were able to save $200 a month, right? What I used to do was just spend it. I didn't even know where it went.
Right.
But now what I do is say, no, I got to automate that saving. So I'm going to either increase my 401k contribution, or I'm going to increase my IRA contribution, or maybe I'm going to increase what I'm paying on my student loans or my credit card debt, right?
Right.
All of those are good things to do. So you automate it, and the more you automate, you decrease the likelihood you're going to make a mistake, right? You decrease the likelihood that money is just sitting in your checking account and you're going to go spend it on something. So I don't mean to kind of go on. I mean, it's a long answer to your question, but that's how I think about the wealth building side of it. Yeah, it's math, but it's also systems like automation and just a mindset that says, you know, my dollars can actually be employees, if you will. Mm-hmm. And going out and working for me.
Yeah, it's an interesting point too, where if you pay attention to those numbers and not obsess about them, because there are some people that obsess about it. You know, they check their 401k balance 32 times a day and that kind.
I'm raising my hand. I do that. Well, not 32, but I'm probably in the the obsessed category.
It it can become something where it's obsessed. Are you obsessed about it because you're worried about it, or are you obsessed about it because it's a fun game? You know,
more
I mean?
The latter.
Yeah.
More the latter. Well, at least it's a fun game when I look at the iPhone stock app and it's all green.
Right.
When it's all red, it's not as much fun.
Not nearly as much fun. But that, you know, that idea of paying attention to it, and, you know, if you're doing things right, there's a point where it's like, I've got a job and my investments and my assets actually made more money last month than I did at my job.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a great feeling.
It's a tipping point. You know, it's kind of like, whoa, wait a minute, this is different. And like you said, it's not even about, are you ready to retire? Are you at financial independence? Or
right.
It's just, there is a point where that's going to happen if you're doing the things you're talking about doing.
Right.
Yeah. So you talk a little bit in the book about these money myths. This is another one of those things that I've touched on, some money myths throughout, you know, as we talk about in the podcast, because I think the way a lot of us view money ends up being just what everyone tells us, you know, as opposed to actually looking at it and figuring out what's the truth behind this. So can you talk a little bit about a few of the money myths that you touch on in the book and what those mean to people?
Yeah. Well, the one that I think is maybe one of the most important is this idea that you need to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. To achieve some level of financial freedom. And some might say, well, what do you mean by a lot? Well, I would say a lot is about $10,000 to $20,000 more than we all make, right? So if you're making $40,000, a lot's going to be $50,000 or $60,000. And if you're making $50,000, it's $60,000 or $70,000. And you just can keep going up. If you're LeBron James and you're making $30 million, I don't know what a lot is to him, $35 million. So, and this goes back to the compounding, which is what I call our superhero. Even on relatively modest incomes, you can save, even if it's 5 or 10%. And over time, and this is the thing that I think people miss. If you fast forward during your working careers and you look at what you could have if you invested and just got an average return, the vast majority of what you'll have comes from the compounding, not the actual dollars you save. Right. I mean, and it's a huge disparity. I mean, for your actual dollar saved will probably comprise less than 10% of your investments when you come to retire, let's say at a traditional age. 90%+ will come from the compounding. And so that's hard for people to wrap their minds around. But when you see that, and the examples I use in my book assume either a $50,000 a year family income or $75,000. I understand some people make less than that, but I'm not talking about, you know, people making $500,000 a year.
Right, right.
And when you do the math over 10, 20, 40 years, the numbers just get, we're talking millions of dollars. So that's the first myth. I think some people sort of just give up. I'm only making, I'm a teacher, I can't possibly have financial independence. Or I'm a firefighter. And we've been sold that. I think there's a lot of people out there right now trying to tell us how terrible our system is, whatever that means. I don't want to get into politics so much. And I'm not discounting some of the issues. They're real.
Right.
But we ought not let that steal from us our dignity and our accountability and our and a belief that we can make a positive difference in our own lives, because I think everyone can. And yeah, so I don't want to, I'll hop off that train, but I think the overriding myth is that we don't have power to make a change in our financial lives, either because, again, our salary isn't big enough, we have too much debt. These are all real issues, but I think at the end of the day, we can have a big positive impact on our lives.
Yeah, it's interesting because as a coach, you know, one of the areas that I work on with people is finances, and a lot around small business owners and people that are kind of trying to make those transitions out of corporate into living their dream. And it's interesting because I've literally had clients that make $250,000 a year household income and are, you know, $80,000, $100,000, $150,000 in consumer debt. So not even not even talking about the house, just cars and credit cards and that stuff, and can't figure out how to get right side up. And then somebody else who makes $35,000-$40,000 a year and has a college fund for their kids that's going to actually send their kids to college and money for in retirement, and you know, because they're doing something with the delta. Now, obviously making $35,000 a year, there's some pretty extreme things that they have to do to create a delta because it's very low income. But the point is, it's not really just the income side. You know, they're doing something different if one of them's at 250 and the other one's at 35 and one's saving and the other's not, and it's not the way you expect it to be.
Well, you know, kind of related to that, and I know people tend to tell me about their money because of what I do.
Sure.
So like I have all these friends and family. I know how much they make, and it's kind of weird. But I know people that make roughly the same amount of money, and one family is multimillionaire. And we're not talking big salaries, you know, $75,000, $100,000, which is a lot, but in Northern Virginia,
not a lot.
Expensive here. And another family making the same amount of money that's just in constant debt and turmoil. But when you look at their lives, they don't look that much different. We think the difference is going to be huge. Right. One's living large and the other one's, you know, barely scrimping just to save every dime. And they're both taking vacations. They both have cars that work, you know, and honestly, comparable. Just that one family drives their car for 15 years and the other family drives their car for five. You know, the differences aren't as big as I think we make them out to be on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
But fast forward 10, 20, 30 years and one family's set, and the other family is figuring it out, trying to figure out how they're going to survive going forward.
And that gets back to that power of compounding there. You know, it's
absolutely,
it's either going to work for you or it's going to work against you. It's just which side of the equation am I on? Am I using the investment side or am I using the leverage side in a way that's hurting me?
Right.
So, you know, if we're just talking about it right now, you know, if you are on that side of the equation where you're not making a lot of money, and again, I'm with you. I think a lot of money is relative. Again, as a coach, I have people come in and they're like, I make a great income. Okay, can you tell me what that is? Because great income, you know, I have no idea what that means to you.
Right,
you know,
right.
That could be $100,000. That could be $50,000. I don't know. So if you've heard this, then you may be thinking about all of this stuff that we're talking about and going, wait a minute. How does this really apply to me? Can you talk a little bit more about the ownership side in terms of, I think a lot of times when we're in that situation, we kind of put off and go, well, you know, it doesn't apply to me because there's nothing I can do about it. I'm powerless. You just mentioned that idea of that myth of powerless. So what are some positive steps that people can actually take and own and take responsibility for that move them in the right direction?
So when I talk to folks who kind of are in a situation like you describe, I'll start asking them some basic questions. Like I'll ask them, well, so what's your net worth? And would you have a, have you ever prepared a balance sheet that shows everything you own and everything you owe? Mm-hmm. No, they haven't. Then we talk about their debt. I'll say, well, you have student loans. Yes, I do. What are your interest rates? I don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you need to do is have basic answers to these questions. So if I were working with someone one-on-one, I'd say, let's just first come up with a net worth statement. You know, your checking account, your savings, your retirement accounts, your home, if you own a home. I wouldn't put cars on there. They depreciate. I wouldn't put your furniture or your clothes, but, you know, your investment assets and things like that. And then down below, all your debt. And I'd want to know what your interest rate, right? What's your minimum payment? That would be step one, right? And by the way, the result might not be all that pretty. That's okay, right? I mean, when I graduated from law school, I had a negative net worth of $55,000. And that was in 92. Today, that'd be what, a negative 150 probably?
150, yeah.
So I've been there. I understand that. And then the question is, I would be scrubbing all of the expenses. That's the thing you can change quickly. You can't change your income quickly, right? And I would look at it two ways. I would look at it, by the way, I can go down the rabbit hole. So stop me if I'm going, you know.
No, you're good. Deep. Keep going.
I divided expenses into two ways of thinking about them. The first are all the monthly bills, which includes everything from insurance to your cable bill, your utilities, car payment, rent, all your debt payments. And I would sort of do an audit of those. That's how I describe it in the book, the money audit. I would do an audit of all of those expenses. Are there any I can just get rid of that I don't need? Mm-hmm. Are there things about what I have that I can change? Maybe I can increase my car insurance deductible. Maybe I don't need 500 cable channels. Maybe 100 will do. Maybe I can get rid of cable and save some money and get YouTube TV instead. Or Hulu, you know, all of these sorts of things. And then once I figure out what I truly need, can I get it for less, right? Maybe I'm paying Verizon Wireless $100 a month for my cell phone, and I can get it at Republic Wireless for a lot less, mm-hmm. right? And so that's sort of the first
maybe
step.
Maybe even call up Verizon and say, hey, you've got this offer over here that you're giving new people.
Absolutely.
Give it
Absolutely.
To me. And they almost right. always do, by the way, if you make that right. phone call.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I refinance any of my debt to bring down the interest rates? All of these are ways to save money that don't actually change our lifestyle. And again, once you've done all that and you've saved whatever you save, remember to automate it, put it towards your savings or your debt repayment. And then I go to the stuff that's going to, you know, that people don't like to talk about, like how much I'm spending on clothes and jewelry and electronics and eating out and all that stuff. And I say, run some experiments. Right now, you may be eating out 5 days a week, probably because you're just exhausted from after work and the kids are driving you crazy. I get it. But pick one thing and run an experiment. Only go out to eat twice a week, or park one of your cars in the garage for 3 weeks, or don't go to Starbucks just for 3 weeks, whatever it is for you, mm-hmm. right? And run the experiment. You may find, yeah, it turns out I don't need that. I can do something else and I'm fine. Or no. Life has been miserable the last 3 weeks. I need that back. Fine. You've learned something. Move to the next thing. So that's where I would start. I mean, of course, there's a lot of detail. Every situation is different.
Right.
So it's a little hard to generalize. But that's sort of, in a nutshell, sort of the routine I walk through. You can always get to income in terms of, you know, maybe you should be looking for a better job. Maybe you should be taking some training. Maybe you should start a side hustle. You know, all of those are options. That can be part of the discussion as well.
You know, the interesting thing there, though, is, and I want to call it out, all of that starts with that mindset shift of, I don't have to just do what I've always done.
Right.
I can actually make some changes in my life, and I own that. You know, it's not on anyone else to tell me to do that. I can own it. I can do it. I have some sense of control.
Yeah, and I encourage people to really get crazy about their thoughts. I call it the what if questions in the book. Mm. You know, people will say, well, I can't get rid of my car because I live 40 miles from work. Okay, I get it. What if you move? You may not. That right. may not work out, but at least ask the question. What if you change jobs? You may not, but at least ask the question. What if your boss will let you work from home one day a week mm-hmm. or 2 days a week? Of course, you may say, I'm a firefighter. I can't work from home. I get it. So it doesn't work for everyone. But, you know, we get into these routines and habits of life, and we kind of put blinders on and think this is the only way it can work.
Right. Because this is the way I do it.
Yeah, we should question everything. It doesn't mean we'll change everything. But until we question everything, we can't see what's possible.
One of the things I'll challenge clients to do when they come is almost inevitably I find people that say, I can either have my car, you know, or get rid of my car. So it's all or none, you know, A or B. And it's like, okay, that is not the only two options in this space. You know. So now your job is to generate seven other possibilities. Okay. Because there's at least that many. I mean, let's generate some options and really look at the space that we've got to work with. Because like you said, maybe it's work from home 3 days a week. Maybe it's carpool 2 days a week and you and another buddy share, you know, my buddy that works at the same place I do happens to live three blocks away from me. Yeah. split the commute, you know, carpool 3 days away, whatever, you know, there's something else that you can do, but I have I think it's a very common, and especially in the Western culture, to kind of look at everything as either A or B, you know, black or white, all or none, up or down, as opposed to, no, let's widen that space out a little bit and think about what else we can do.
Absolutely.
So one of the questions that I ask everybody on the show is this. You know, the title of the show is Inspired Stewardship. Stewardship is something that I talk about a lot on the show. And yet at the same time, it's another one of those words, kind of like, you know, I'd make a great income. Great. What's that mean?
Yeah.
It means different things to different people. And so I like to ask everybody what that word stewardship means to you and how has that impacted your life?
Yeah. So the meaning for me has changed over time. Mm-hmm. Or been added to, I suppose, maybe a better way to put it. For my wife and I, we focus on charities that help children, right? So we've been a part of charities that help, say, one charity in particular that helps teenage girls or young women who have, you know, had some difficulties in life from a variety of different reasons, but helps them kind of rebuild their lives. And we've helped with other children's organizations, one overseas, but that's where a lot of our sort of financial stewardship goes, if you will, is to help. We have other charities that we support, but our focus has always been on charities that help children. For me in my business, you know, I'm an editor at Forbes now, so I kind of, my whole story, I was a lawyer, I retired, I had my website, I sold it. Right. Then I retired again. And then Forbes called me and I said, sure, I'll help you on a project. And it's been a year and a half. I'm not sure what I'll do tomorrow. We'll figure that out then. You know, I published the book, Retired Before Mom and Dad. But at one point, all of this was just sort of like a business, right? I mean, in other words, I was a blogger. I didn't have a lot of interaction with people. I was just producing content. Then I started my podcast and all of a sudden people started emailing me and either saying, thank you for such and such. It was really helpful, or asking me questions. And it's going to sound silly, but it's like, wow, people are actually listening to me. That's kind of frightening. I hope it's no one I know. It was a weird feeling. And after a while, though, of course, you get used to it. And then you realize, you know, you're impacting, just like your podcast, you're impacting the lives of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And once you realize that, boy, it's an awesome responsibility. Mm. You know, I mean, it's not like we're just talking about Monday Night Football. Not that that's not important. Right?
Or the Buckeyes.
Yeah. Well, that's right, or the Buckeyes, although they don't play this weekend, but that's okay. You realize you're really impacting the lives of people in a very important way, in this case, money. And so I really started to think about what will be next for me in a way that I think can help people, which I hear other people say that, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying that. The guy just wants to make money. But what happens after a while is you don't, to be quite honest, you don't need the money. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when you don't have to work, you start to think about things other than the money. I mean, when you need the money to pay the bills, then obviously you think about work and how you can make your money, you can pay your rent. But, you know, we've gotten to the point now where that doesn't have to be my primary concern. And so I'm thinking, how can I impact the lives of people in a positive way as it relates to their finances? And I sort of see that as part of the stewardship. So, for example, I'm going to start producing a lot more YouTube videos that really, they're not sort of the high level 60,000 foot, you know, spend less than you make. They're going to be, okay, let's roll up our sleeves and figure out how we actually spend less than we make. How do we actually do it, right? It's just an example. A big part of it is investing. I think a lot of people are scared about investing. Mm-hmm. And I want to take help people take the fear out of that. We pay the investing world a tremendous amount of money because we're afraid to do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Some people need or want help, but I think a lot of people can also do it on their own. So that's part of what I'm trying to help people do.
You can find out more about Rob and his book, Retire Before Mom and Dad, at retirebeforemomanddad.com. All of his social media stuff is over there as well. Connections to him on LinkedIn, Facebook, and of course, I'll have links to everything over in my show notes as well. Rob, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
I think other than what we've talked about, I'd love to hear from folks. They can email me at rob@retirebeforemomanddad.com. I mean, that's kind of part of the stewardship thing is, you know, responding to email. So I read every single email I get and respond to everyone. So happy to hear from folks.
Thanks so much. And again, I'll have links to all of that over in the show notes. And thanks for joining us today, Rob. Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.